To talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. It's 10 o'clock.
Very good.
It's 10 o'clock.
You can tell time.
And for the next 2 hours, you're stuck with me, Mark Salem. And we've taken calls about car questions and tires and overheating and
oil and whatever.
Folks, you have no idea what my life is like every day with questions.
Right.
Yeah, and the lucky ones have my phone number on it. Now, a friend of mine from high school, his first name is Bill, and he owns a trenching company. He called the other day to argue with me. And I'm not quite sure if he was just tickling me or if he was serious. But I don't argue with him about backhoes and excavators and construction stuff. But I did call him when I was digging that one trench with the excavator, asking him, when you hit concrete, what does that mean? And he said, you hit electrical.
Yeah.
So he said, try not to, you know, try to dig around it. And I said, oh, I'm done right now. I'm done. Nevertheless, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And this portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Automatic Transmission Exchange. Phil has been around since 1968. We got a really nice call last week where a gentleman had, I think, a $3,500 estimate for the transmission, and Phil fixed it for $800.
Mm-hmm.
And what that's called, folks, is kind of a shotgun repair. We're not going to just fix your oil leak. We're going to reseal your whole motor. We're not just going to replace one axle. We're going to do both of them. We're not going to replace just the fluid in your transfer case. We have to do the differential and the front, both differentials at the same time. So those are kinds of things that you'll have to wade through when you have your car repair done. But he was pretty proud, and he was pretty happy that Automatic Transmission Exchange had really done him a good job. And I think the discussion we had, too, was, is what's the difference between the two different ideas? The idea that's, we're going to sell you everything.
Right.
And that's something that I dealt with I don't know how many times this week. And the idea that you only need $800 worth of work and everything else is fine. And the idea is greed versus the guy that's just doing the right thing. It's just, that's what we're supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it typically comes with a little gray hair. It typically comes with a little bit of experience, because we'd rather, all of us, the old gray-haired guys that think about this, we'd rather be your hero than your bandit. And so that's kind of how it works. But anyway, Automatic Transmission Exchange is at 40th Street in Washington. Been around a long time. So, and if you live anywhere in Phoenix and you're looking for a transmission shop, may I suggest Automatic Transmission Exchange? So, do you have anything on your mind besides nothing?
Yeah, but I can't talk about it right
okay,
now.
Okay, all right. Well, that's fair enough. Mm-hmm. Well, I found something kind of cute, and I thought for people that are in the Phoenix area for the first time.
Cute? It's interesting.
You know, if you're already starting off really bad.
No, I am.
I know. Well, I got 2 hours of you, so and I control all the buttons, so
that's right.
I can take you down in that fast. Okay, it's interesting. Maricopa Freeway, Papago Freeway, and the I-10 are
all the same.
So when the news people talk about the Maricopa Freeway, the Papago Freeway, and the I-10, it's all the same road. But only in Phoenix do we do this. But we have other examples. The 202 is the same road as the Red Mountain Freeway.
Yes.
Do you know where they talk about the Red Mountain Freeway?
I think it's the North 202.
See, and I think it's the East 202. So I don't know the answer to that.
Okay.
But I thought Red Mountain was more Mesa, Apache Junction. So I thought it was
which
that kind of
the
loop.
North, yeah.
All right. Dunlap and Olive are the same street.
Okay.
That didn't make any sense to me.
Excuse me.
You have a cough button for that. Try to use it, okay?
Yeah, you are controlling the buttons.
Yeah.
So.
Peoria and Shea?
Yes, yeah,
same
I would
street.
Have never guessed that.
Glendale becomes Lincoln Drive. Jefferson becomes Washington, but they're still not the same street. Jefferson?
They merge.
Yeah,
somewhere.
They merge.
Okay.
I-10 is called the I-17 is called the Black Canyon Freeway, as well as the Veterans Memorial Highway. And that's the north and south through Phoenix, or actually starts in Phoenix and goes north. The 101, the 202, and the 303 remain a large mystery to most of us in the valley. That's really, do you know where the 303 is?
Yeah, it's way out west.
And it goes kind of north. It's a shortcut to Las Vegas, Whitman, out
yes.
in that Grand Avenue area. Okay, so the 101.
it's east, kind of, it's, well, it's not really real, not far east. I think the 202 is further east, so
yeah.
They're not in order, really.
Okay, but I think the 101 kind of loops the valley. I think it starts north,
yeah.
and it takes I-7, no, it actually goes way over by 20th Street, or, on the 20th Street side, and then it goes to the south, and then it goes to north, so it kind of loops the city. But we've been here a long time, and we still struggle with these kinds of things. It's not yet been determined if there is a red mountain or a Santan or just a red tan mountain.
So yeah.
The 51 has been recently renamed Piestewa Freeway because Squaw Peak Freeway was too easy to pronounce.
Yeah, I don't know if I agree with that.
Oh, it's just,
I think there was, yeah.
It's a little tongue-in-cheek. The 101 is also the Pima Freeway, except west of I-17, where it's called the Black Canyon Freeway and the Veterans Memorial Highway. That's confusing as all heck. Thunderbird becomes Cactus, but Cactus never becomes Thunderbird because it dead ends at a mountain. Which is just, I know what they kind of mean. El Mirage Thunderbird becomes Waddell Road. And then this is one of the things that's really, it's really Phoenix. If somebody actually turns on their turn signal, it was accidental.
Okay.
Okay. And if you're in the left lane and only driving 70 in a 55 or 60 zone, you are considered a rose hazard, and people will make sign language to you to display how they think of your lane choice. For summer driving, you should wear potholders on your hand.
Mm-hmm.
And note that there are many more issues of phenomenons in driving in Phoenix, like after the red light changes, four cars are allowed to go through.
Yeah, that's I've seen that.
And so, anyway, in Phoenix, we're probably no different than any other big city. But the freeways, more than anything else, are kind of confusing.
It's
I wish they'd just kind of hang their hat on stuff like
or
that.
Or I always get mixed up, like Mesa Drive is McQueen, and Cooper and Lindsay,
uh-huh.
I think, are the same, and I forget which is which. And
so you have to pull out your phone, pull off to the side of the road if you're smart,
right.
And look at your phone and decide which one is which.
Exactly.
All righty, we have a caller. It's probably about the highways, or we've made a mistake, or it's a car question, but
okay.
We'll take them either way.
Okay.
Good morning.
And this is Chris.
Chris, good morning.
Hey, how you doing, Mark?
Good.
Question. My daughter's got a 2010 Honda CR-V four-cylinder, and 2 weeks ago I was listening to your show. I listened to it religiously, by the way.
Thank you.
You mentioned a leaky head gasket, and you only recommend one head gasket in a can.
Sealer, yeah.
Right.
Head can sealer, yes. Which one is that?
Okay. Well, first of all, let's go over the symptoms. So,
okay.
How is it, do you know, or what are the symptoms you have that indicate it's a head gasket issue?
It's bubbling. When you turn the car off and it comes up to complete temperature, the temperature gauge goes up. I guess they're supposed to do that. But what happens is that it bubbles, and then the next time she gets in the car, it really overheats. It's overheated two or three times.
Okay, those aren't necessarily head gasket issues. Let me give you an idea. When the head gasket fails, this is what happens: you shut the car off, but the cooling system still has between 12 and 17 pounds of pressure in it. Now, at this particular point, the cylinder, the compression stroke of the cylinder, which is 100-plus PSI, it's going to overcome the 17 pounds of pressure on the other side of the gasket. So when the car's running, it kind of keeps the water out of the cylinder unless the gasket's really, really bad. So when you shut it off, there is no more compression, so we have 17 pounds of pressure shoving water into a cylinder. The most predominant, and it's probably 90% of the time, you let your car sit overnight, and then the next morning you start it up, and for mysterious reasons, it runs really bad. It has a dead miss. And then all of a sudden, as you sit there and rev and rev and rev, all of a sudden, voila, it runs fine, and it runs
exactly
fine all the way
happening.
To work. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So if that's the case, do you remember what the name of the thing is? Go. Yeah.
It's called K-Seal.
Okay. K is in King,
uh-huh.
Seal. If you don't follow the directions, which means if you're a man, you're going to need your daughter's help. If you don't follow the directions, it's not going to work. Okay? It's best to have one reading and one you know, doing. It's a process. Now, I want to tell you the success rate for this stuff is like 99.9%. We had a Suzuki Samurai that was brought in, and clearly it had a head gasket problem because as fast as we could put water in it, it was coming out of the tailpipe. So we pulled the spark plugs, we cranked it over, and we knew that this one cylinder was puking water like there was no tomorrow. So, but we were really concerned because this was a huge leak. So we thought, I will try it anyway. I think our price on this is $125 to $150 for the whole procedure, which you end up with coolant. Mm-hmm. We also do all the test driving and driving and all that kind of stuff and the testing afterwards. Mm-hmm. And so we thought, well, and we have a money guarantee. If it doesn't work, we'll give you your $125 back or whatever because we're that sure it works. So we put this in there and we went and drove it. It didn't work. So we didn't even put that on the ticket, but we ended up pulling the head off of it. And the head gasket, the fire ring was gone for maybe 2 inches. It was the biggest head gasket leak we had ever seen, and we had to go, okay, well, that's why the sealer doesn't work. Mm-hmm. But just follow the directions. You could find it at any auto parts store, but please just follow the directions to a T, because just like other men, we don't always do that, and when we don't, and if it says to let it idle for 20 minutes, it means let it idle. Now, for future reference, the car should always run between half and three quarters on your gauge. So I've had 3 calls this week alone where people said, I'm overheating, da-da-da-da-da, and I'd say, where does it run on the gauge?
1 minute.
And then they say, well, it did, and they keep going, like Daryl did that to me yesterday.
Okay.
He was saying, I was pulling my trailer up Slate Creek Hill and blah, 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 and I'm overheating. And I said, I want to know where the gauge is at. So anyway, I finally divided his gauge into quarter, half, three-quarter, and red, and we found out that he's running between half and three-quarter, which is just normal, especially hauling his big trailer up Slate Creek Hill on his way to Payson.
That's really it. So, steep hill, yeah.
So anyway, in that case, hopefully we've helped you. And
fantastic.
It's an orange bottle.
I think it's purple with an orange label. If I'm not mistaken.
Okay,
but it's purple and orange for sure.
All right, I just remember
I'll
the
find
orange.
It.
All righty, good enough.
Thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome, right. Chris. Thank you. Okay, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. If you have a car question or a car problem. We get lots of vibration problems, but mm-hmm. the one that I got that I'll talk about after the break is the email from Mel.
Okay.
He took his Lexus in for an airbag recall, and they gave him a list, I think, of $3,000 or $4,000 of the work that the car needs. So we'll talk about what my conversation was with him. And, folks, I'm not down on dealers. Dealers are good competitors. There's dealers, there's chain stores, there's specialty shops, there's independent repair. That's what I'm considered. So we all work together, but there's bad apples in every single aspect of car repair. So, but it doesn't mean you're a bad apple. It just means business is slow and you're probably inspecting cars with a magnifying glass that's the size of a satellite dish.
Gotcha.
And so that would be something you want to avoid. We'll be back in a minute. Minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and for the next hour and a half or more, we're talking about cars. If you'd like to join us, you're more than welcome to join us. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. And we'll take your call, but right now we're going to take Luke. Luke, good morning. How can I help you today?
Yeah, good morning, Mike. How are you?
I'm very good. Thank you very much.
Excellent. My Plymouth Voyager, the beloved Plymouth Voyager,
okay.
I have, it's 96, excellent car. And at this time, when I turned the headlights on, the junior lights in front and in the back doesn't come on. The right side comes on fairly well, but the left side, those two junior lights doesn't come on. I need to get your input on that, please.
Okay, so what you're talking about is the two white lights to the front, so the two headlights come on, but you're talking about on the left side that the amber light in the front and the red tail light in the back, they don't come on.
Correct.
Okay. Well,
Shall I go for the fuses?
Well, see, wait. Let me think out loud here. The park circuit, you're talking about the park light circuit. And so the headlights.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
The park light circuit is what you're talking about. It's the two ambers in the front and the two red taillights in the back. Not the brake lights, but the taillights.
No, not.
Okay, so the headlight switch controls that, and the fact that the two right side are on, why would you check the fuse? Because we certainly don't have a fuse for the left side and the right side. So,
I see.
All right, so I think what I would do, and see, I don't know if you can do this, but I would look at a wiring diagram and find out where the crossover occurs. Where is it that we cross over from left side to right side? Is it in the front of the car? Is it in the back of the car? Because it'll be one of those two places. Now, the only other possibility is both the light bulbs are burned out, so that'd probably be one of the first things I'd do is I'd probably pull that front amber, and I would take the bulb out and look at the filament, and then I'd probably take a test light and check the 12-volt and ground. You could have power to those lights, but you could have lost the ground to those lights. So this isn't a difficult thing on a 1 to 10 scale for any, you know, old guy. It's easy, but you got to find where it crosses over. Now, if you were to take a small, I don't know, 12 gauge wire and run it from the battery to the power side of the front light and you lit both of them up, then you'd know you're losing the power circuit, not the ground circuit. But if you went power from the battery to the hot side of the left front bulb and it didn't light both of them up, then you've lost the ground circuit. So, but you're going to need a wiring diagram in order to find out where those lights are grounded, where the left side are grounded, and almost always they're going to be grounded up on that driver's side fender or where the core support is, and the core support is where the radiator's at. So that's how you would attack it.
Yeah, the bulbs looks okay because I changed them to the right side and tested them. They both came on and works fine.
Okay.
So whatever is, I believe, the defect will be on the wiring system, as you explained it.
Yeah. That's really what, but that's a good idea to switch them side to side, and if they both work, they both work. Now, you should have probably only had, you would have two filaments in those lights, in those bulbs,
yes.
Because you'd have park circuit, and then you'd have turn signal circuit.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you're just going to have to track it down. You know, what you can do is hook, you know, turn on the park lights. You don't need the headlights on when you're testing it. Turn on the park lights, and just walk around the car and wiggle wires and wire harnesses and see if all of a sudden the lights come on. You could try that.
Okay.
All righty.
Okay.
Good luck.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You betcha.
Bye-bye.
You betcha. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. And we've got another caller. And who would that be, Gil?
That would be Scott.
Scott, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Good morning. Hey, I got in the car and you guys were talking transmissions. And I didn't quite get the name of the company that you were referring to. But basically, I've got a 97 F-150 that... for some reason, when you're just driving about, 60, 65 miles an hour and you downshift, it has this clunk. And then, but if you put it in overdrive and you do the same, very same thing, I don't have that clunk.
Okay.
It's weird.
Is the clunk on acceleration or deceleration or at the shift?
Acceleration.
Okay. And
acceleration, and it's like it's downshifting, but it's like a hard shift.
Okay.
But for some reason, when it's in overdrive, it does not do that.
All right. Well, it sounds like the transmission has a 1-2-3 overdrive. Is that right?
I think so, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, when you get into overdrive, the only thing we're doing is locking up the converter. So, that's all we're doing. So we're not even using the transmission. We're just locking the converter, which locks the engine to the drive shaft. And so we're just kind of a 1-to-1 ratio. Now, if you wanted to, you have to learn how to make it happen because Phil and his staff can drive it with you. But you're going to save a lot of your time if you can show him what's going on, because he's going to want you to show him, then he's probably going to want to drive it himself so he can duplicate it. When you drive down the road in overdrive, if you keep your right foot on the throttle and you take your left foot and you just kind of push on the brake pedal, not enough to slow it, but enough to shine the lights, you'll hear it downshift. You'll feel it and hear it. What it's doing is it's taking it out of overdrive and putting it in third gear. But if you drive around in just third gear, what I hear you say is there's no clunk. So if you pull it out of overdrive, the shifter, and you put it in third gear, clunk is gone. Yes?
Yes.
Okay. It would sound like that you've got a harsh application of the torque converter. So we're either releasing it hard, or maybe the pressure in the transmission's too high, but the transmission guys would that would be easy. And if you can drive down the road in overdrive and gently touch the brake pedal and let go and make it clunk, which is engaging and disengaging the overdrive or the lockup converter, then that would be something that would be really interesting to them. But I can't tell you what to do. I can't tell you what it is, but I can tell you how I would want you to make it happen so I can see it.
Okay.
All righty?
Okay. No, that makes sense. That makes sense.
Okay.
Because I was kind of thinking it was the torque converter, too. It's like it's so much pressure, so much torque, and it just, I don't know, it just slams into gear, you know what I mean?
Okay. It's good. And the real question is, you can manually shift it, too. Pull it down into one, and then you in, and then it'll go, and then if you back off the throttle a little bit, it'll probably go into overdrive and then lock up. So you can manually shift it, because the real question is where is the hard shift between 2 and 3,
right.
Between 3 and overdrive, between overdrive and lockup? That's the question. Where is the harsh shift? So, all right. Well, thank you very much for calling, Scott. And that's Automatic Transmission Exchange, 40th Street in Washington, the north side of the road. And I'll write down harsh shift. And, you know, last week we had all kinds of attaboys from our best car repair shops list, and you can find that at marksalem.com, marksalem.com. And that's the idea is that these shops, and I've had this list since 1988, these shops are the very best shops in town. I personally know every one of the owners. I've been to their shop. I've shook their hands. We've probably had more than one beer together. So we all think the same. We all think that your interests are in front of ours, and we all just simply want to find the problem, fix the problem, which will fix your symptom, and we all move on together. So when we come back, we're going to take calls, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. My name's Mark Salem. It's 10:30, and we'll be back talking about cars in just a minute, 602-508-0960. Well, you're listening to 960 Kate KKNT. I'm looking at something and I'm trying to talk at the same time. Every Saturday we're here talking about cars and car repair problems, and all you have to do is give us a call, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Larry Harker's Auto. Bob and Ellen have been around Larry Harker's Auto since 1967. He's really good, and he's very good as a diagnostician. Bob is one of those senior guys. He's got gray hair all over his head. And he's been around the block, and he has all the self-confidence in the world. He's not arrogant in any way, shape, or form. But if you've got a car that nobody else in town can fix, and you've had it to shop after shop after shop, 38th Avenue and Indian School is where I take it. He's a good guy. Auto, electrical, work, brake service, auto emissions, vehicle maintenance, oil changes, flushes, whatever you need in the maintenance arena, he can handle. But again, if your car, if every time you turn on the radio, the horn honks, he can fix that kind of silly problem. So that's Larry Harker's Auto, 38th Avenue and Indian School. Been around since 1967. Okay, so anyway, Mel goes in, has his airbag done.
Okay.
And they tell him his dog bone's bad. Do you know what a dog bone is?
A mount.
It's a mount. It's an upper engine mount. So it looks literally like a dog bone. And on each end, it has big loops. And in the loops is the rubber.
Okay.
Okay. Now, it keeps the engine. It's a front-wheel drive car. So it keeps the engine from rocking forward and rocking backwards. Kind of holds it there. So I said to Mel, and he's one of those few people that has my cell phone number because he's a lawyer. And, you know, sometimes I need lawyers.
That's right.
And sometimes I need somebody to come get me. And those lawyers, I got a lot of their phone numbers. So anyway, he says, I said, does it have any clunk if you take off hard or if you brake hard? He says, no. I said, are you sure? And he goes, yeah. He says, I drive that way, so does my wife. I said, okay. Well, I'd like to see the dog bone, but in reality, symptoms usually drive the repair.
Sure.
So it's probably, I'm going to guess because I haven't seen it yet, but it's probably one of those deals where the rubber is cracked. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Or the rubber is weathered or whatever. It's also one of those jobs that's really easy to do. It doesn't pay a lot of time, but it's a good profit deal.
Okay.
Part and labor. Then they told him that he needs an axle for $563, but then they talked about something else, and if you did this, then we'd save you $67. And I don't really know what that was all about. And it was real vague. And it was under the same labor operation, which is R&R, the axle. Take, remove, and reinstall is what R&R stands for. So it was kind of confusing with respect to what it was, but I think it was one of two things. They were going to take the axle, the front, it's front wheel drive, so they're going to take the axle out and reboot one end or the other. So you have an inner joint and an outer joint, and both joints are like your elbows. They kind of swing in a circle.
Mm-hmm.
And then inside the boot is grease to lubricate that joint. So with the boot, the rubber boot tears, then as the axle spins, it throws the grease out. So that's how we know that you need. So I think that they're going to take it out and just put a boot on it. But then they talked about an axle seal. Now, the axle seal is where it pokes into the transaxle.
Okay.
So you take the axle, slide it in, then you attach it to the spindle, and then ultimately it's attached. The other end's attached to the tire.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if they had two, if they were going to do a boot and an axle seal.
Right.
Or if they were going to do a complete axle and the axle seal.
Right.
But they said there was a savings in labor. That's a good idea, because if we take the axle out to replace it, the seal's really easy to get to.
Sure.
So you don't want to take the axle out and replace it, and then 2 days later bring it back, so we have to take the axle out and fix the seal. Mm-hmm. So there's a savings there.
2 minutes.
And then he needed a brake fluid flush, and he had 80,000 miles on it. And a brake fluid flush, as you well know, is very subjective.
Mm-hmm.
You can ask 20 technicians when somebody needs a brake fluid flush or when they should do a brake fluid flush, and you'll get 15 answers.
Yeah.
So, folks, we have available to us hydrometers that are really cheap things to have, and we can check the moisture content in your brake fluid. So if your moisture content is 3, 4, and 5%, it needs to be flush. But if it's 0.5% or 1% or 1.5%, it doesn't need to be flushed. Because frankly, when we pull it out of a can brand new, it probably has something similar to that. So everybody has a different measuring stick too. Some guys go, oh, well, you can't go past 1. Some guys will say, you know, well, we're going past 2. So we go 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody has kind of a different. Now, on top of that, to really mess everything up, there's companies that make litmus paper.
Right.
So you stick it into the brake fluid. I'm really, I don't use those.
Mm-hmm.
I don't use those because in the past we've bought 3 or 4 different brands and they all have different results. So I'm really, the hydrometer is more scientific.
Okay.
And we can use the hydrometer for coolant as well, because it'll tell you if you're 38 below zero, if your coverage is 38 below zero. In reality, what happens is your 50-50 mix. That equals 50-50. So you have a perfect amount of water and a perfect amount of coolant.
Mm-hmm.
So that number kind of shows what you got. A lot of folks don't think that if a little coolant, if 50-50 is good, then 60-40 is better or 75-25 is better, and that's not true. Coolant needs water to work. That's why it's 50-50. And you know what kind of sophisticated equipment we have.
Yeah.
Okay, we have a 5-gallon bucket. You dump a gallon of coolant, and then you fill that jug up, and you put a gallon of water in it. That's all there is. And there's no reason for you to go search hell over high water to find some kind of fancy-dancy water to put into your radiator, because no one cares, and the car doesn't know the difference.
Yeah.
So you don't have to get distilled, and you sure don't use RO water, and you don't have to get deionized water, or you don't have to get water from a certain volcano in the Fuji Islands. That's all a bunch of craziness.
Yeah.
Just
and it's cheaper to buy the coolant not diluted.
Well, there's a discussion about that, too, because if you do the math, sometimes it isn't.
Sometimes. It depends on the price, I guess.
Right.
Yeah.
And what happens is you're buying half water and half coolant.
That's exactly right.
And so if it was half the price of a gallon of undiluted coolant, then you'd be okay.
Right.
I like it. It's pre-mixed.
But most of it's not.
It's
about
not
the same price.
Well, and they've got the bottling and the jug, mm-hmm, and all the handling and the label on top of that. So I don't really like the pre-mixed because you're buying half water.
Right.
I like the full unadulterated coolant, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And what coolant do you put in your car, Mrs. Salem?
I don't know, but we need to take a break, so we'll talk about it after the...
I'll decide when we take a break. All right. Well, the answer is here's the question. Pink, orange, green, red, purple,
I don't know
yellow.
What color my car takes.
Okay. Those are all the different colors.
Right.
All right. So, and I'll explain that when we get back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. 45 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and we're here helping you with your car questions or car problems. You're welcome to join us if you have a car question. If you and your husband argue about stuff, then I can judge. I can be the judge. I can pass the gavel and decide who's right and who's wrong.
Yep.
602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by S&S Tire. S&S Tire is in the West Valley. They serve Peoria, Surprise, and Goodyear. I've known S&S Tire for a very long time. The father's passed away, and the two boys, Rob and Dan, run it now.
Mm-hmm.
And they are very qualified. They've been around their father for many, many years.
Yeah.
And they started like our kids, picking up cigarette butts in the parking lot mm-hmm. at 6 and 7 and 8 years old. And then they worked their way into mopping floors. And then when they got the driver's license, they take people home.
Right.
So they've done everything that we've done. And they really know the difference between right and wrong. So they've been open in that area. And they have three locations, Peoria, Surprise, and Goodyear. They have a really deep line of tires. So you can go in there and they'll take your tire size and you can say, give me out the door price for good, better, best on tires for my car. So if you want the best tires, they got them. If you want a set of tires to put on there, and you're going to turn your car in the next 6 months for lease and you want to have some decent tires on there, they've got those as well. And they also do alignment and suspension work, which dovetails nicely into tires. Because the guy who's going to do alignment and suspension work would really like to see the old tires. So having them see the old tires and then working on the car to fix the wear pattern is the deal made in heaven.
Mm-hmm.
So we oftentimes, somebody will bring their cars to me and they've got new tires on it and they want alignment and suspension work, and I would have really like to see the old wear patterns on the old tires.
Yeah.
So S&S Tire, Peoria, Surprise, and Goodyear. Three different locations, good guys, both Rob and Dan. All righty, we've got a caller, and Gil, who would that be?
That would be John.
John, good morning. How can I help you?
Morning, Mark. I got an 06 Chevy Colorado, 2.8, 335,000 miles on it, 5-speed. Wow. Lately, in the midday range, when it's a lot warmer, in first gear, to accelerate from a stoplight, it'll start coughing, surging, whatever you'd like to call it. Of course, the air conditioner is running. Sometimes it'll do that every time I accelerate for a couple hours. Yesterday, it did it for 15 minutes.
Okay, now, this is a manual transmission. Did you say 5-speed?
Yeah, 5-speed.
Okay. So are you thinking it's engine-related or transmission-related?
I don't think it's transmission-related. One time it did it on the freeway going like 70 miles an hour, and it'll just kind of jerk, 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 and then it'll stop. But like yesterday, as soon as it started doing it, I turned the air conditioner off until I got it to where it would run fine. You could push down on the throttle and you don't get anything. No response whatsoever.
Okay. All right. 335,000 miles?
Yes.
Okay. When was the last fuel pump it had in it?
Never.
Oh, geez.
Fuel pump? Yeah, that's amazing.
I had another truck. I have a yellow one also. The fuel pump went out on it after, I want to say, over 500,000.
Okay, well,
and it just, I was coming back from Tucson, and it just quit.
Okay, well, we don't want people to think that that's what they're going to get. Most people get 100,000 miles plus or minus 20,000 miles. So what that tells me is two things. Number one, the fuel pump in the fuel tank is lubricated and cooled by the amount of gas in your tank. So the college kids from ASU who run around on a quarter tank, we do their pumps more often than we do Grandma Moses who lives in Sun City or Ahwatukee who keeps her tank full all the time. Because the fuel pump likes to be cooled and lubricated by the gas. And, of course, if you're running around on fumes, then the fuel pump's out there in Never Never Land overheating. So you have classic symptoms of a fuel delivery problem, but what I don't understand is that if it happens in first gear and we have a substandard flow or pressure or volume of fuel, then it would be getting worse in second, third, and fourth. And you only talk about first gear. Okay.
Yeah.
So if you go out there and you quick shift that thing tomorrow morning on Sunday morning and you happen to get on some freeway that's around here and you hard shift second, third, fourth, and fifth, that thing will just fly along. Forget first gear now, but through second through fifth, that thing will just fly along and have all kinds of power and it won't hiccup at all.
Yeah, because when I've gotten on the freeway before, like when it's kind of done it, and I can tell when it's going to do it and when it's not doing it. So I'll make a turn to get on the freeway and I'll run it up to like 5,500 RPMs, perfectly fine. Shift into second, go up, you know, 4,500, it's perfectly fine.
Okay. Well,
it has done it in second gear, you know, if I shift through first, because I'm going halfway, you know, a decent speed. So I'll shift it into second, and I'll still get it.
Okay, but none of that makes any difference, okay? We can talk, you know, for the next hour, but the gist of it is this jerking, missing sensation occurs in first gear, and apparently it exists in second, third, fourth, and fifth, and that tells me it's not a fuel pump. It doesn't sound like a fuel pump. So, and if it's not fuel-related, then it has to be either EGR-related, throttle position sensor-related, some kind of an ignition misfire. The question then is, I'm thinking out loud here, if I got an ignition misfire, why don't I have it in second, third, and fourth, and fifth? So the answer to your question is, I don't know what the heck's the matter with your car. I don't even know where to start. But I know that I would want to drive it, and I know I would want to see what you're talking about, and I think I'd have a pretty good idea of where to go after that. What part of town do you live in, and do you have a garage already that you like?
Well, my yellow one did that, and I got the what's that thing that comes up low power or something like that across your screen.
Okay.
And I brought my yellow one in, and you guys looked at it, and of course it wouldn't do it when it was there, and so you couldn't find anything wrong with it. Now the only thing that's related between the two of them, I put Lucas injection cleaner in the gas.
Okay. None of that makes any difference. None of it makes any difference, because until we fix it, then we can answer all those questions. You know, until we get it fixed, then we can say, yeah, it was directly to your Lucas. But injectors don't just act up in first gear. So, I mean, we can kind of go in all these different directions, but really and truly, somebody has to drive it. And of course, like you said, if you can't feel it and it's not there when you're looking, then it's very difficult to try to determine what it is. But if you want to help, you have to come to us and say specifically, this is when it does it and I can make it happen, and this is when it doesn't. So this makes a difference. This cold in the morning, it's much better than after it's hot. So we're going to have to scan it, and we're not going to compare it to your yellow one, because they're two different vehicles under two different situations, and that's not how we fix cars. We diagnose the problem based on symptoms provided by the customers, but we just want to hug you when you come in and tell us you can make it happen. Because when you can make it happen, and obviously my shop and other shops, Monday mornings and Friday afternoons are not the time to bring it in and take
and
one
maybe
of our
plan
techs
on leaving it for a day or two so that we can, or if you can tell us and show us and get it to act up while Eddie's in the car with you or somebody's in the car with you.
Well, that's what I said.
I know.
Okay.
I know, but to assume that he can come in and, you know, just have us wait for 2 hours and try to get it to, I don't know,
okay,
if that would
all
work.
Right. Well, I think what we're saying is that most shops can handle a technician going to drive it, but then to turn around and have him diagnose the problem and fix the problem is not kind of a lobby kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a good idea. And we don't like putting our technicians under those kinds of time frames. But by the same token, the test drive is the most important. That's
right.
What I want to drive home. The test drive is the most important. Get it to where you know how to make it happen and show us how it goes away, how you make it not go away, and that'll be the end of it. So anyway, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, and we have another caller. And Gil, who would that be?
That would be Rick.
All righty, Rick, how are you today?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm good.
Hey, I have a 2003 Toyota Highlander, and it keeps throwing this, I think it was PO446 code.
Okay.
Which I guess is the EVAP system code.
Okay.
So I've been trying to, you know, it's a small leak somewhere, I think, according to my little scanner thing. So I've been, I all the obvious ones I can't seem to find. I mean, everything seems to be just fine. All the hoses are connected, no real problems. But I'm zeroing in on this vacuum switch, you know, under the hood here.
Okay.
And I'm trying to determine, I took it off, and it's in the open position. So I guess that's my question. Is that supposed to be in the open position when the car is off? Or is that...
Well, it depends on what it is.
Yeah, I guess that's kind of a...
Yeah. All right, well, let me explain. An evaporative code means that the computer is commanding something to happen, and it doesn't see it happen. So the question is when the computer commands the valve on the top of the tank to open and let us suck the fumes off, it's telling the valve to do it, but it doesn't see it happen. So the question is the signal defective, or is the soldier defective? Or, on the other end of the scale, when we open the valve, then there's a pressure sensor in the tank, and when we open the valve, the pressure sensor will change because now we're sucking the fumes out of the tank. So the question then becomes, is the purge valve bad? Is the pressure sensor bad? Is the signal bad? And you're never going to get there. And,
no,
and
okay.
I let me tell you that the good news is, once we determine... And we can, with our scanners, we can make things happen. So we can apply the purge valve. We can make it happen. What we do is, and every shop does it, we have a smoke machine. And we just plug in this dense smoke machine that makes white, dense smoke. And we go to plan A, we go to plan B, and we go to plan C. And we're going to find a leak. We're going to find the problem, because when we fill the gas tank up with smoke, then we better see it coming out the firewall area when we open up the purge valve. So you have to kind of know what everything is, and you have to kind of know what's going on. But I would say about a third of the time we're going to be working on either the sensor or the purge valve on top of the tank. But sometimes we have a purge valve underneath the hood, and then sometimes we have a canister problem, and that's where we take the fumes from the fuel tank and run them through the canister and then reintroduce them to the engine. So we're actually using the fumes off the fuel tank as a fuel economy thing. So that's kind of what's going on. The evaporative code, and your little handheld guy, it doesn't have the ability to command things, and it doesn't have the ability to look at specific things. So we can actually make things happen and then
okay.
Watch it happen. What part of town do you live in?
Chandler.
Okay. I don't have anybody in Chandler. I don't have anybody in West Tempe. Are you more East Chandler, North Chandler? Where?
South Chandler.
Okay.
But I work in Tempe.
Okay.
By ASU.
All right. Well, Fenno up on Schumann's Automotive, owned by my friend Mike Fenno. He could handle this. He's up close to ASU. He's on the 101 and the 202,
mm-hmm.
the southwest
okay.
corner of the 101 and 202. And in South Chandler, I'm embarrassed, but I'm the only shop in that particular area, and we're at Warner and I-10. And so,
okay.
And you're going to have a diagnostic process, and then they're going to call you. Now, what you hope for, if you've been a good boy, you hope for is you're going to have to wait till the end of that, because I got a break in 1 minute. One minute?
We've got 58, so
well,
I thought.
Well, Gil just said 1 minute.
I know.
Is it 1 minute or 1 second, Gil?
I'll give you 1 minute.
Oh, okay. All right. What you hope for is that we say, we found the leak, and the hose was just old and decrepit, so we went back and we cut an inch off the hose and replugged it in, and it's brand new. So that's one of those deals that it cost $111 to find it, and it cost $2 to fix it. So that's the best that's going to happen to you. And that happens 20% of the time.
Yeah.
So we're going to fix the problem when we're there. Anyway, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Gil, I'm going to throw it back to you with 30 seconds left. I'm sorry I missed my break. It's Renee's fault.
To talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, welcome back for hour number 2. My name is Mark Salem, and we're here talking about cars. You're welcome to join us. You're welcome to chime in. You're welcome to be involved in whatever we're doing. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. This portion of Under the Hood, it's a two-hour show on Saturdays. Do you want to run the show, or you want me to?
No, I was saying something sounds funny now that you just pushed that last button, but.
Okay, so I'll just kind of interrupt the show to make you happy.
No.
What do you want to
do? It sounded like it was an echo or something. It's okay. Go ahead. Maybe he can't hear it.
I don't know. Okay, I'll do this. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Strictly Diesel. Strictly Diesel is a great diesel shop. He's diehard diesel service, repair, parts, all that kind of stuff. They do domestic and import diesels and light trucks. So you can count on them. Anything diesel that falls in the foreign and domestic light diesel truck area is good. I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. Nate is the guy that kind of runs the shop, and he sells also parts 24 hours a day on their website. So it's a Better Business Bureau A-plus rated shop staffed by some of the very best technicians in the business. So I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road, Strictly Diesel. We were talking before the break last time about coolant, and you never did answer the question.
I don't know what kind my car takes.
You don't know?
Nope.
Okay.
I have somebody that takes care of that for me.
Oh, okay. Okay. That's a good idea. Anyway, there's pink and orange and yellow and green and all kinds of colors, and each car's supposed to have their same color, but we don't do it that way. We use an amber, which is called a universal. And the big companies, these are huge antifreeze companies, they say to us, this works in any application. We've got them big. Now, they have a couple of acronyms for coolant, HOAT and OAT. H-O-A-T and O-A-T. So those are the two kinds of coolant. But the universal coolants handle both the HOAT and the OAT coolants. So we use amber. So folks, when you look at your overflow jug, or if you look in your radiator, unless you're getting ready to change the coolant, you probably should use the same color coolant. However, there's a lot of us guys that have been around since this whole thing started, and I personally have never seen a person have a car repair bill that was related to him putting green coolant in an orange coolant, or orange into a green, or pink into a blue. It's just all craziness. So that's the real issue at heart, is what's the risk? And the risk, in my opinion, is simple and none. Now, we do have people that take coolant too long in their life and the coolant becomes corrosive. We have that. And most everybody's cars since 1996 is going to call for a coolant change maybe once, maybe twice a year. So if it's once a year, you're talking about 75 to 100,000 miles. If it's twice a year, then obviously you can do it at 30 and 60 or something like that. So just watch your owner's manual. And that's a good idea anyway, because your owner's manual dictates what your car's service is timed for, both months and miles. Sometimes you go into this is for women now. You go into the auto repair shop, and it doesn't make any difference if it's a female service writer or a male service writer. It makes no difference. You'll be told that you're due for this. Women should say, let's get my owner's manual out, and would you show me where that's at? And folks, I can tell you, I would bet a lot of money, I would bet a lot of Renee's money, that they're not going to want to go into the owner's manual, because they just told you that you need a transmission service at 30, but yet your owner's manual calls for it at 100,000 miles. So there's a real problem. There's transmission shops out there that talk about 30,000 mile services no matter what your owner's manual says, because we're in Arizona. The fact of the matter is Arizona doesn't have its own owner's manual. If they tell you that your owner's manual is not written for Arizona, then tell them to order you an Arizona owner's manual. And there's no such thing. Just like there's no such thing for Minnesota. So when Minnesota is minus 20 degrees or minus 50 degrees, North Dakota and some of those northern states, they don't have an owner's manual for them either. So the owner's manual is good for all 50 states and probably all of Mexico and all of the Central America and all the islands to the east of Florida, all that kind of stuff. It's written for all of us. So the car makers are the best people to determine what it is that your intervals are. So it's just a good idea to pull the owner's manual out and have them show you. But if they're not telling you the truth, then they're not going to want to do that and come up with an excuse why they shouldn't. Now, the flip side of the same coin, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960 if you have a question. At the same time, there's going to come a time if it sounds like this. Mrs. Salem, we did look at your cooling system as part of our oil change because we do all your fluids, your belts, your hoses. We change your oil and your filter, and we kind of look at anything that might be wrong. And your coolant is really, really dirty. So instead of being nice and pink or nice and green or nice and orange or nice and blue, it really looks like very ugly, dirty water. So that's something you should plan for. Your coolant flush is $125, $150, whatever it happens to be. And that's your coolant flush. If you'd like me to show you, I'll show you when your car's pulled forward. You can look in your coolant recovery jug and see that instead of being a nice color or clear, it's obviously just this brown liquid. And that's something you need. Now, that's something you wouldn't pull your owner's manual out for.
Right.
Because we have a problem. That goes for power steering fluid and transmission fluid and coolant and brake fluid, all that kind of stuff. There are certain times that the color and the consistency of the liquid just, you know, throws it right out the window. This is bad. You need to address it. I don't know that I've had anybody towed in because their coolant was ugly or that their brake fluid was ugly or anything like that, but those are issues that you're going to save you money if you address them at the appropriate time. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We want to talk about Action Auto Repair at I-17 in Deer Valley. Action Auto's been around since 1983. I've known Tom since early 80s, even before 1983. I think 79 or 80 is when I first met Tom. He's on I-17 in Deer Valley. He's on the northwest corner. He has ASE-certified technicians. They're masters, and so that means they know how to diagnose and repair your car. Tom's a good guy. His staff are good people. I know them personally, like I've said about all these shops. So if you live in that area, that Deer Valley, that North Phoenix area, and you don't have a repair shop that you already trust and like and patronize, then may I suggest you just call Action Auto for an oil change and see how you like them. What did they do? How did they greet you at the counter? Did they get everything on the work order that you asked them to get on there? Did they bring you out to their car? Stuff like that. You see, we won't let you, my industry, not we, but my industry won't take you out into the shop to show you something if what they're going to show you is okay. They're going to say that you can't go out there. There's many of us that have already checked with our insurance companies. As long as you're escorted, as long as you're with someone, you can't go out there and start hanging out and talking to the technicians. But as long as you're escorted out there, our insurance company says, fine, take them on out. Mm-hmm. Just watch out for hazards. Don't let them trip over a tire. I mean, watch out for them. Don't have anybody pull an air hose when they're standing straddling it, because that's not a good idea. You're going to get their pants all dirty, or you're going to run their nylons. So the idea is go out into the shop and show you.
Nylons? Okay, go ahead.
You don't wear nylons anymore?
Not many people do.
Okay. Well, see, that's not something I would have known.
Really?
Okay, yeah. Yeah, that's not something. And my buddies, none of my buddies would know that either.
Okay, go ahead.
So the idea is whether we run your nylons or we get your slacks dirty.
Okay.
The idea is that we're supposed to be in charge of you out there. So we had a guy one time that walked out there, and we asked him to stick close to the car. And the technician went into parts, and I turned around to grab a phone call, and he backed over a jack handle and fell down. Through the grace of God, he was fine.
Yeah.
But he was a long way away from where we left him. So we learn, like every other shop, is just stay with your customer and watch out for hazards like that. So it's a bad idea for the car that you're showing him work he needs. It's a bad idea for you, the guy next door to catch his car on fire.
Yeah, that is a bad idea.
It doesn't instill the confidence that you typically need.
No, it doesn't.
602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We've talked about a whole lot of good shops. My shop list is on marksalem.com. My name is Mark with a K, Salem like the cigarette, Salem like Massachusetts, Salem like the witches, which one of them sitting here next to me right now.
I only inherited this name, yeah. So I'm not a witch.
It doesn't make any difference. It's Salem. So nevertheless, MarkSalem.com, and then we have FAQs there that pretty much is a conglomeration of FAQs that it consists of questions that we get and we have received on radio shows since 1988. Mm-hmm. So it's, my car won't start. That FAQ is in there. It's, my car's overheating. We talking, walk you through that. My air conditioning only works, you know, in this area or this, at this time of the day. Not too long ago, we had an old motorhome come in. And with motorhomes, unlike cars and trucks, we can look up exactly how much refrigerant a car truck takes. It'll typically be in ounces. So it'll say 16 ounces or 31 ounces or 28 ounces. It'll tell you exactly how many ounces of refrigerant. But motorhomes are made up of a variety of parts. So there's no tag underneath the hood, and there's no way to figure out how much Freon this thing takes. So you kind of just got to play with it. So we got this motorhome, and we started with like a pound and a half, and then we started adding 2 or 3 ounces at a time. And we ended up getting it to where it would blow ice cubes out the vents down the highway at 45 degrees. And it would warm up to about 50 degrees when it started in city traffic. But the fan clutch was working, and and we went in and did the compressor because that's what it originally came in for. But there was a difference of about 5 to 10 degrees between highway speeds and city speeds. And that's the reason for that is when you're on the highway, you're driving 50, 60, 70, depending on road, 80, 90, and 100. The air through the grill helps the air conditioning, and there's a condenser up there, and the condenser's part of your air conditioning system. The condenser, we want to take the heat out of the condenser, so the airflow at 50, 60, 70 miles an hour makes the condenser really work well, as opposed to being in stop-and-go traffic on the freeway or city driving. So it's always going to be. But the rule of thumb is this, the Mark Salem rule of thumb. When you're driving down the highway, you should have 55 degrees or less. There are some cars out there that we can get down to where they're high 30s. And there's a lot of cars we can get into the 40s. But the real measurement is something less than 55 center vent, fan speed 3. You don't want to run high, but fan speed 3, center vent temperature, 55, 65, 70 miles an hour down the highway. 602-508-0960. I'm Mark Salem. We'll be back in a minute. 21 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, my name is Mark Salem. Sitting here next to me is my business partner and my wife. And sometimes I wish she was at Nordstrom's or Target as opposed to here, but you know what I mean? 21 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock, 602-508-0960. If you have a car question or if you want me to settle an argument between you and your husband or you and your son or you and anybody else, then just give me both sides of the argument and I will do what I can to answer the question, which is, which one of us is right? And oftentimes, I don't have enough information to do it, but we can still discuss the issue. 602-508-0960. Autodynamics is Sun City's largest and most trusted source for complete automotive services. They've been family-owned and operated since 1982. Chuck Nide started it, and now Derek, his son, is running it. They're proud of their I'm proud, too, of their quality service, and they stand behind the work that they do. They have staff and technicians, and Derek has decided that they will not be paid a commission to ensure his customers that they're not going to take advantage of them. That's a concept that we don't see much in our industry, and that's actually a concept that I don't subscribe to. However, it's kind of interesting that he's doing this, and he says that it hasn't impacted his bottom line at all. But other people can decide to put a layer of people in between the technicians and the customer to kind of sift through that details. But nevertheless, in Autodynamics, you can be assured that nobody's paid a commission or a percentage of the repair bill, therefore they don't sell unnecessary parts. Autodynamics, it's on the north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue. Sam, thank you for calling. How can I help you today?
Oh, hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I've got a 65 Chevy El Camino.
Okay.
And I called you last week about a starter. Well, I took the old starter out. I found out that it's a straight mount, not the staggered. But the housing by the Bendix end is cracked, just like the other one I took out 2 or 3 years ago.
Do you know why they keep cracking?
Well, what you're talking about is the nose cone, right?
Yes.
Okay, that's the nose of the starter. I can only guess. I don't know. I'm sure I could probably make a few calls and talk to some other gray-haired guys to see what they found. But there is a critical measurement that we use with respect to the teeth and how they engage into the flywheel. And we don't want them to be too deep, so the protrusion of the tooth in the starter goes into the valley on the flywheel. And we don't want that tooth to be buried in that valley, and that's why we use shims. If you're gonna replace the starter, and you could actually just go get from a starter rebuilder, you could probably have them just put a new nose cone on your starter. But if I were you, I'd probably buy one or two small starter shims, and I would put one on, which between the boss, the upper portion of the starter, and the bottom of the engine and the bell housing. I'd put one on and listen to it, how it starts, and then I'd put the other one on and listen to it, how it starts, and I think you're going to be able to hear a difference, and I think you're going to know and feel the difference when we stop interfacing those teeth too deep. So
okay,
you have nothing to lose.
Okay, it had one shim on it already that I put on last time, like I said, 2 or 3 years ago.
Okay.
But it cranked over fine, like last week, and then 3 days later I went to start it, and then it just, like, you hit the key and it would just jam into it and it would not crank.
Okay. Well, the question is we have to take the starter solenoid and we activate a magnet, and that's when we pull back on the starter drive lever, which pushes the starter drive forward. So there's a fulcrum in there. You know where that's at. So
right.
When we pull backwards on the top, we push out on the bottom, and that's when we throw the starter out there. That would probably, well, it could have been because the nose cone is broken, and that's the reason why it wouldn't engage. But I think I'd stack another starter or another shim on there. I think that would be the best thing. Now, another thing you can do is you can buy some blue dye, and you can coat the teeth, and then you go ahead and start it 3 or 4 times. You have to install it, of course, and wire it. And then you start it, and then you pull it out and look at the teeth pattern on the flywheel. And if we're grabbing half of the tooth, that's good. But if we're grabbing 3/4 of the tooth, you might want to space it out a little bit more. Is this high-performance motor? Is this any kind of a monster motor?
No, it's just a 350 stock.
Stock, okay. All right. I would think that another shim would be the appropriate action at this particular point.
Yeah, I'm looking at the gear, and it looks like it's at least 3/4 down into the engagement. So.
Okay, now wait a minute. Are you looking at the drive gear on the starter, or are you looking at the flywheel?
The drive gear on the starter.
So you've got 3/4 of a mark on each one of the teeth that you're looking inside the nose cone. Oh, I'd definitely start.
Right.
I'd definitely bring it out one more, and maybe two. So if you're going to go buy a starter shim, buy two of them. And I would go one more out. And then I think that would be the very best thing there for you.
Okay.
Alrighty.
Sounds good. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Sam. You're welcome. That goes back a long time. We don't do that anymore now.
Yeah, what is it, a 65?
Yeah, 65 El Camino. But back in the days of the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, and probably even through the 80s, we always bolted the starter upward. But now what we have is that we have a flange on the front of the starter where we have like 2 or 3 bolt holes. And as we slide the starter in, it's set. There's no shims. There's no nothing. But oftentimes you can look at the teeth, and I'm kind of proud of him because he looked at the teeth on the starter drive, and he said that they looked like that the wear pattern goes 3/4 into the tooth.
Yeah.
That indicates that the teeth are probably bottoming out.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be, and hopefully he hasn't damage the flywheel enough to where this new starter creates a problem. But chances are that's not going to happen.
Those three-whiskered kids probably wouldn't know that, you think?
There's a lot of three-whiskered kids that know. I mean, but the three-whiskered kids are a beneficial part of our industry.
Yeah.
You know that. Look at Adam.
Yeah.
Adam Strickler.
Yeah.
Adam came, first of all, I went to high school with his dad.
Right.
Sean. And so Adam came to us, and he didn't know crap from Shinola.
No. Nope.
And he started up through oil changes and busting tires. And today he's a master tech. He's the youngest master tech we've ever had pass the test.
Yeah.
he is one of the top dogs in our dog pound.
Yeah.
He is certainly, and he does the big diesel work that nobody else in the shop wants to do.
Right.
He has no fear of anything. Yep. And of course, he's been with us how many years?
Well, I know he had his 15-year anniversary, so.
Just recently?
Yeah.
Okay, so.
Probably
a
couple years ago. So,
he started as an hourly wage guy, and now
At the car wash.
Yeah. Okay.
Mm, yeah.
So he started over there working Saturdays and Sundays, emptying trash cans and making people happy, but he was transferred into the shop, and then he went through. But he's a master tech.
He's an L1,
yeah.
As a matter of fact. So that's even in addition to that. And
right.
He has his ASC for diesel, too.
Right.
So light diesel.
He actually has one more certification I don't have. I don't have any diesel certifications. Mm-hmm. I think I know them, but I'm just not too lazy to take the test. Other people say that the same thing. But Adam has diesel, ASC certified. He's a master tech in the gasoline portion of it. And then he has an L1, which is an advanced performance. I also have an L1.
Right.
So it's an advanced performance, which means we understand fuel and spark delivery a little better than the average bear does.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think we'd call him a three-whiskered kid.
No,
Adam would definitely be a gray-haired guy. He's been around the block a couple of times. Nevertheless, it's like doctors and lawyers and dentists and stuff like that. You don't want some kid with three whiskers pulling all your teeth out. You know what I mean? You want the old gray-haired guy that's done that a couple thousand times. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, or maybe a woman with gray whiskers, whatever.
About that demon automobile.
34 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and we're here talking about cars. If you'd like to join us, we still got 30 minutes to the show. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. One of my shops in Mesa, one of my best shops, is Thompson's Auto Repair in Mesa. He's the only one in Mesa. Now, folks, some people don't apply, and some shop owners do apply, but they just don't have the experience, or they don't have the certifications, or they don't have insurance, or they've not been in business for 5 years. Those are all kind of marks that I need to make sure that you have. But there's no problem with Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. He's been in this location since 1970. But he has both sides of his family, the Thompson family and the Vivian family, have been in business in Mesa for probably 50 years. I worked for one of the Vivian boys in 1968 in Tempe. So this family's been around a very, very long time. But Brian and Thelma, you only have to meet them to understand why they're so good at what they do, is because they're just the salt of the earth. They're the nicest couple in the world, and they have ASC certified technicians, and they perform and provide the highest level of automotive diagnostic and service and repair and follow-up and all that kind of stuff. So in Mesa, I'm sorry to tell you that I only have one shop at Stapley and Main. So they're on Main Street, just east of Stapley on the south side of the road. Great place, and if you don't have a place, may I suggest you try Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. Let's go to the phones. Frank, good morning. What is it I can do for you?
I just have an easy question. What's the average life of these small batteries used in the off-road vehicles and wave runners and jet skis?
You know, as far as I'm concerned, I'm replacing those things. And I think you're talking about like my John Deere lawnmower. You're talking about my quads. You're talking
right.
about stuff that about 3 years. And what I do is anytime I take one out, I just took one out of the excavator the other day and replaced it. And that was 4 years old. But when I put a new one in, I take a Black Magic marker, which is something my wife will tell you that I have in my pocket every day of my life. And I write right on it what the date and where I bought it and how much the battery was. So for me, about 3 years. How are you doing in comparison with that?
Mine is 2 years old. I was wondering whether I should replace it now or not.
No. What's it on? What's it on?
Wave Runner.
Okay. That's probably something that I would change at 2 years. I would agree with you. And here's what I'm thinking. With a quad, most of us have enough wire or jumper cables in our quad, in our toolbox or whatever, to jumpstart one another. But a Wave Runner, you're not likely to have that. And so,
I don't want to get stuck in the middle of the lake.
but I think you'll agree, too, that Wave Runners have their own unique set of problems with fuel pumps and getting the air filter wet and just a lot of other things that can leave you out there bobbing around in the lake with no chance of getting that son of a gun running again. So right. it's but as far as the battery and the cranking is concerned, let me tell you not to everybody. You can't ignore when your car and your Wave Runner starts. That's normal. But when you go and you get that real slow crank, and then all of a sudden it speeds up, they go, oh, well, that's the motor. Uh-uh, that's the starter, or that's the battery. So that's you need to address that, yeah. Now, I'll give you a hint. On your battery, there's going to be some numbers. And if you Google those numbers, you're going to find lots of different batteries, and you're going to look at the pictures, and you're going to determine what I already know, and most of them have the same stupid kind of battery. And that battery in your Wave Runner can vary $20 or $30. I order all mine online. So.
Oh, okay.
So it's nothing to ship them. You don't have to have security guards bring it to your house and all that other kind of stuff. And typically they're wet when they come, so you don't have to add the acids. I think I've had one that I had to add. Yeah. And it was kind of the thing, you take all the caps off and it had this big plastic thing with six things on it. You cut the ends off, you put it in there, you squeeze them all together, and boom, it's full. So it was pretty easy, but that's what I would do if I were you.
Oh, thank you very much.
You're welcome, Frank. Thank you very much. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Is there any other argument? Oh, fuel economy. Fuel economy. Where is it that you can make your best fuel economy? What can a driver do to get the very best fuel economy?
Well, I would say not stop and start real quick, like at the lights and stuff like that.
Okay. And here, let me exaggerate that a little bit. If I can tape a fresh egg to your throttle pedal and mm-hmm. tell you not to break it.
Right.
Something silly as that, or a plastic egg and don't break it. Yeah. So if you were to drive as if you had a hot cup of coffee that's full between your legs mm-hmm. or on your dashboard directly in front of you, if you were to take that hot cup of coffee and put it there and not take off like crazy and throw the coffee all over your lap and all over you, that's how you drive. Mm-hmm. You drive as if you have a hot cup of coffee or that you've got a plastic egg under your throttle. Because I could cure this fuel economy issue by just doing that. Now, with computers, we could easily stop you from doing that. The car makers could stop you, but they are not going to take away your ability to throw the throttle to the floor at a traffic light because you may need to get out of the way, God forbid, from somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not going to take that away from you. And speaking of cars and computers and stuff, when we come back, I'm going to tell you about a case I just had where a lady was involved in an accident, and the black box kind of told on her. And so when we get back, the moral of this story is that if you have a crash and if your airbag deployed, it's a bad idea to tell lies about what you were doing before the accident. Just shut up. Your lawyer will tell you just to shut up. But to tell lies, more than likely, and 90% of the time, we're going to know what you were doing no matter what you say. So we'll talk about that on the other side of this break. My name's Mark Salem. Every Saturday, 10 to 12, we're here on KKNT, and we'll be back in a minute. 44 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, my name's Mark Salem. Sitting next to me is my wife, Renee, and I am an ASE Master Tech, and I've been working on cars since 1968 when I was about four. And I've been an ASE master for 25 or 30 years. I lost track. Nevertheless, we're going to talk to a couple of callers real quick, but I want to tell you about Kurtz Automotive. Kurtz is at I-17 in Bell. There was a time that Kurtz had that area kind of all to himself, and I used to ship a lot of cars to him and say to people, you stop by Kurtz because he's really good. I can't tell you how many times that guy, Eric and Jeff and Kurt, have pulled rabbits out of their hats. They have fixed cars nobody else could fix. They can do things that other shops really struggled with. And as we all know in the general repair arena, it's a bad idea to have your glass guy who installed your windshield tell you how to fix your air conditioning. It's that kind of a problem. But Kurtz is at I-17 in Bell. He's a good guy, been around since 1987. He does both gas and diesel. He doesn't like it when I tell you, but he does domestic and import gas and diesel, but he'll also fix your weed eater, your blower, or your lawnmower. He's really good at all that kind of stuff. I-17 in Bell, Kurtz Auto, great place to have your car repaired. Don, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you very much.
Well, great. You know, today, fortunately, you can't help me.
Okay.
But what I wanted to do is give you a call and thank you. We moved back to Arizona last year out of country. We bought a 2007 Toyota Camry, and the brakes were squealing. So I took it into Earnhardt to get the brakes checked. Well, lo and behold, it had a ton of things wrong with it. And so they, one of the things they wanted to do was replace what you were just talking about a few minutes ago, the top engine mount, the dog bone.
Yes.
And I don't remember how much it was. I will give the guy, the service writer, credit that he said, you know, you ought to get it replaced, but you can drive it some, but I wouldn't drive it too long.
Okay.
Well, I got in touch with you guys. I sent you an email. I heard you on the radio on 960. And I got in touch with you by email. And you recommend, we live in Mesa, so you recommended Thompson's Automotive. I took it over there last year, and I have been a customer of theirs ever since. They are so nice, and they looked at that and said, you don't need to replace that. Said, yeah, the rubber's cracked some, and I eventually go out. But when it starts jerking when you start or start it or start and stop, bring it in then. So that saved me several hundred dollars. And it's really nice to find honest people that'll work on your car. I know there's a lot of them out there, but it's nice to be able to talk to somebody or email somebody like you to have them recommend it to you. So I just wanted to call you and say thanks.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for that. You know, that is a huge part of my life, and I enjoy it. I enjoy it. I feel like I've been blessed in ways that, you know, when I get to the pearly gates, I'm going to ask him, you know, what was special about this day at this time, and why wasn't I in jail like I oftentimes think about.
Yeah, I understand that one, too.
Yeah. So, and the answer to your question, and thank you for the, your attaboy for Thompson's Auto Repair, is just there's just too much stuff out there that you don't need to nitpick a car. And you, in, if I were king of the world, I would draw a line and say, this is stuff that's never going to cause you heartache, and it's never going to cause you the need of a tow truck, and this stuff you are. I kind of like that idea. We see, and it comes from just dealerships as well as other independents and chain stores and specialty shops, where they use words like wet and seeping and weeping. Okay? So, wet means it's kind of like your forehead after you walk outside on a humid day and you come back in. It's just kind of wet. But for me, a leak is something that's on your garage floor. Okay, that's all there is to it. Or you're adding fluid. So we had a little old lady from Ahwatukee. She had been told that she had a bad power steering leak. So we looked at it, and we found some wetness on one of the tie rod ends, but there was nothing in the boot and nothing on the ground. And when you drive down the road at 30, 40 miles an hour and you have a bad leak, it blows oil all underneath the car, and then it swirls up on the rear bumper and on the truck deck lid. So it's easy to find a leak like that, but leaking is different than weeping, seeping, and it's wet. And we saw one of those the other day where everything was weeping and seeping and is wet, and we just yanked the customer, come on out here and look at it. You make up your mind. This is your car. This is the car next to it. There's a car here. We're going to look at all three of these cars, and we're going to see that he has what you have, but it's just not that big of a deal. But the measurement for ladies is, how come I don't see anything on my garage floor and you're telling me I have this significant leak? That's a hard question to answer. And oftentimes the technical aspect of it has been regurgitated by the technician to the service writer, and the service writer doesn't have the ability to answer those hard questions. But that's okay. You can say, I'll sit down and you go ask that question for me. So, but thank you, Don. Thank you very much for that. Jim, you're up next. What you got?
Good. Just first, I want to say thank you for being on the air. Second, make this quick. About 4 years ago, I took my car in. The check engine light went on, and they determined it was the emission control valve or something. And I was due for license plates, so they replaced all that. And the guy talked me into a procedure where it's like a three-step procedure to clean the engine out.
Yes.
And they do one thing, and you have to wait X amount of time, and then you do another. And then the third was they do like an intravenous thing hanging from the hood.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. I think so they did that, and I think it was $150 around there, and I was just wondering, because since then, thinking that my engine is totally clean now, I still put in like STP injection cleaner. Do I need to do that or no? Do it about once a month.
Okay, you don't need to do either one of them.
Okay.
The three-part cleaning series, it's sold as a maintenance item, but you have no idea how much money I make if I did that. But I don't even have the ability in my shop to do that. Those are symptom issues. If you have a problem that I think is a bad injector, I might clean the injectors and say to you, hey, Jim, better, worse, or the same. And you say, oh, it's much worse. Well, then it is an injector. If you say, oh, it's much better, then it is an injector. And if you say it's the same thing, it ain't the injectors. So yeah. I'm talking about my shop and many of the other guys I know. We use that kind of three-flush process to diagnose. We're saying better, worse, or the same. So we can find that. And sometimes you're lucky and you fix it. I don't sell that. And I don't think you should put anything inside your gas tank because we have no idea what kind of a long-term effect it has on your catalytic converter. And to be honest with you, if it was a necessary chemical for your motor, then they'd put it in the gasoline. So we already have detergent. We already have cleaners. We already have water absorbers. We already have a whole lot. So it's important to know that I make a lot of money when the guy comes in and he says, Mark, I got this brand new machine, and it's a three-pot series, and you're going to clean the back of the intakes. You're going to clean the inside of the engine is just going to be spotless.
Yeah, that's what he said.
Okay, so here's the problem with that. Here's the problem with that. The engine in the oil compartment, we're not going to clean that. In the cooling system compartment, we're not going to clean that. In the exhaust system, we're not going to clean that. And if you think I'm going to clean the top of your pistons and the top of your head and all your valves where they looked like when your motor was 5 miles old, you need your head examined. So that ain't happening. And here's even worse than that. Who cares? You know, if you've got too much of a carbon buildup, it's going to ping, and I'm not going to be able to fix the ping until I drop a camera down the spark plug hole and go, holy mackerel, Jim, has your wife been driving this thing that's got carbon on it that, you know, looks like the thickness of a Wrigley's piece of chewing gum? I've got to get that out of there. So, yes, there are times we clean the engine, but to think that we're going to put some fancy-dancy chemical in your car and make the inside of the cylinders, the cylinder wall, the top of the piston, the valves, and the top of the head, make it look like chrome, ain't happening. And if they say it's going to happen, you say, okay, let's get the camera out now. Let me peek inside that cylinder. And when you're done, if it's spotless and it looks like a brand new motor, then I'll pay you. And that's what I would do.
Well, you saved me $4 a month now. I'll stop.
And let me just change your question. Mark, how many vehicles in your fleet? Well, in our rental fleet and my extended family, I bet we have 100 vehicles that we are directly responsible for. Renee only has one, and I only have one. But we got rental cars, we got shop trucks, we got all kinds of stuff. Oh, we have Zambonis, we have forklifts, Mark, do you put anything in the fuel of any of your diesels or your cars? No. Mark, do you ever clean the upper intake or the valves of any of the cars you know? No. Do you have the ability? Yes, we do. What do you use it for? Symptoms. We try to fix symptoms, and that will help us understand if we're going in the right direction. So it's not a maintenance item. It's part of a diagnostic process. But to put fancy stuff in your car and think I'm going to clean out your tailpipe, Jim, you need to just kind of slap them when they say something like that.
So you mean if I put out like a chrome tip on my exhaust, my car won't go fast?
Well, you know, it may very well go faster. I do have a chrome tip that'll make it go faster. It's $399, but if you'd like to stop by and take it for a test drive, you can.
No, thank you.
All righty. Thank you very much for calling, and thank you for making me laugh. That was a, and folks, I'm sorry. I don't need to be a naysayer. Our industry, that's not in your owner's manual for a reason. It's not in your owner's manual for a reason. Now, we do have a big problem in our industry with what we call direct injection. We used to spray the fuel at the back of the valve. Now, on the valve, it has a small film of oil. so the fuel would wash that oil off and carry it into the cylinder, and everything was fine. We've moved the injector from that area to directly into the cylinder. So we're going to inject the fuel instead of the back of the open valve. We're going to inject it directly into the motor, to the cylinder. That has created a huge problem because no longer are we washing the oil off the back of the intake valve, which means that grows. And it starts out as a black carbon, a thin film. But we have seen, now the hole we're talking about is the size of a quarter, between a quarter and a half dollar. We have seen cars come in where the entire back of the intake valve is plugged solid with carbon. Plugged solid. Now, we got to take the head off and chisel all that out. So, because we've moved the injector from where it's been for the last 50 years to some different area because of a fuel economy thing, we've created this whole new problem. So now the newest thing is we're going to go back to two injectors on your car. We're going to use one to spray a little bit of gas to keep the oil from turning to a carbon, and we're going to use the other one to spray lots of fuel into your cylinder. That's a crazy idea. So you can expect the car's maintenance will grow as we try to determine as an industry how to fix this direct injection. And it's just a bad idea that somebody came up with, and now there's a whole bunch of cars out there, and those people are paying a price. And especially if you get out of warranty before you have to do that. Although some of the manufacturers are taking care of their customers if they're outside of warranty. So in their defense, I say that. Mm-hmm. So, my website is marksalem.com. There's lots of good information there. There's pictures that are of people are important to me. There's a picture of my shop if you want to look at it. There's a picture of our radio studio on our website. So we actually transmit from there, as well as in, we have a place up north where we keep our horses, and that's where we're transmitting right now. We also have a list of the very best car repair shops, both paint and body, transmission and mechanical and diesel. So we've got pretty much all the bases covered, so you can go there. In addition to that, we have some FAQs, and they're in categories. So when you look, you can search no start. And see, folks will say, they'll walk into our shop and they'll say, my car won't start. That's not good enough. We have to be smart enough to say, Mrs. Jones, does it go ruh, 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 ruh? And she says no. And I said, okay, well, the correct thing is your car doesn't crank over. That's important. Now, does your car crank and not start? Or does it not crank, so therefore can't start? Or does it crank over and not catch? See how important communication is? So does it click and not crank, which means a solenoid problem? Does it crank but not start, fuel or spark problem? Or it doesn't crank, which is a battery starter solenoid problem. So that communication level at the front counter is really important. So if you walk in and you say, my car doesn't start, and they go, okay, well, thank you very much, we'll call you after we diagnose it. You have to ask yourself, well, that it's kind of like I have a pain, and in reality, I just missed my break again, and I'm sorry. So, hey, Gil, do you want me to take you to the top of the hour?
No, you can stop here.
All righty. I'll see you next Saturday. Take care. Drive safe.